Yashav Yashava Yava Samstanai Kalpito Loka Vistara Tadvai Bhagavato Rupam Vishuddham Sattvam Urjitim. Yasya, whose? Avayava, bodily expansion. Samstanai, situated. Situated in. Kalpita is imagined. Loka, planets of inhabitants. Vistara, various. Tatvai, but that is. Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead. Rupam, form. Vishuddham, purely. Sattvam, existence. Urjitam, excellence. Translation. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purush. But he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual existence par excellence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The conception of the Virata Rup or Vishva Rup of the Supreme Absolute Truth is especially meant for the neophyte who can hardly think of the transcendental form of the Personality of Godhead. To him, a form means something of this material world, and therefore an opposite conception of the Absolute Truth is necessary in the beginning to concentrate the mind on the power extension of the Lord. As stated above, the Lord extends His potency in the form of the Mahat-Tattva, which includes all material ingredients. The extension of power by the Lord and the Lord Himself personally are one in one sense, but at the same time the Mahat-Tattva is different from the Lord. Therefore the potency of the Lord and the Lord are simultaneously different and non-different. The conception of the Virat-Rup, especially for the impersonalist, is thus non-different from the eternal form of the Lord. This eternal form of the Lord exists prior to the creation of the Mahat-Tattva. And it is stressed here that the eternal form of the Lord is par excellence spiritual or transcendental to the modes of material nature. The very same transcendental form of the Lord is manifested by His internal potency, and the formation of His multifarious manifestations of incarnations is always of the same transcendental quality without any touch of the Mahat-Tattva. So I'll read the verse again. Yasya Yashava Yiva Samstanai Kalipto Loka Vishtara Tadvai Bhagavato Rupam Vishuddham Sattvam Urjitam. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purush, but he has nothing to do with the created material elements. His body is eternally in spiritual existence par excellence. Here in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there will be a description of the various incarnations of the Lord. And those incarnations of the Lord manifest as they appear through the Vishnu expansion of the Lord, or the Purusha incarnation. So three different features of the Purusha incarnation are mentioned here in verses 1 to I think it's 3. At 1 to 5, it mentions the Mahavishnu or Karanadakshay Vishnu, from whom the material energy emanates by his potency as an expansion of the spiritual chit potency. Mahavishnu glances at the material energy, and at some stage he then expands himself as Garbhadakshay Vishnu and enters within each and every one of the universes which have also entered into the material energy through the breathing process of Mahavishnu. And then later, Garbhadakshay Vishnu further expands as Kshiradakshay Vishnu. So sometimes it is mentioned that Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the source of all incarnations, because the first incarnation of the Lord is the Virata Rupa. And from the Virata Rupa, Lord Brahma is born. And later, Lord Shiva is manifested also within the universe. So actually, and also expanding from Garbhadakshay Vishnu is Kshiradakshay Vishnu. So, in fact, we can say that Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the source of all incarnations, because the Virata Rupa, Shiva, Vishnu and Brahma all expand from Garbhadakshay Vishnu ultimately. And then from Kshiradakshay Vishnu, all the various incarnations appear within the universe, all the transcendental forms of the Lord. So therefore sometimes it is said that Kshiradakshay Vishnu is the source of all incarnations. So these incarnations of the Lord that appear, which are mentioned in this chapter, they're all transcendental personalities, spiritual personalities, situated completely on the spiritual platform with no touch of the material energy. So in order to make this clear, in this verse here, it is describing that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of the material manifestation and then who later appears within the material manifestation, is aloof from the material creation. So although the whole material world is resting upon and expands from Vishnu, in this case, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Initially, the material energy is resting upon the energy of Mahavishnu, and then the universe, the universal form, is actually resting upon Garbhadakshay Vishnu, but at the same time, Vishnu is completely aloof from the material energy, whether as Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, or Kshiradakshay Vishnu. In fact, the spirit soul is also, just like this material body, this material body expands from the spirit soul within. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the body cannot develop. But at the same time, the spirit soul is completely aloof from the material body. And therefore we see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that although the body goes through various different changes from boyhood, you know, childhood, youth, old age, we see that the soul within because it's aloof, it doesn't change when the body changes. So the soul is separate. Whatever is happening to the body never affects the soul. It's completely aloof. We also see in the fifth chapter where it describes that although, you know, seeing, eating, walking, moving around, evacuating, doing so many things, actually the soul does nothing at all. So the body does so many different things, but the soul is always aloof from the material body. So whether the spirit soul or the supreme soul, the super soul, they always remain aloof. And at the same time, the material body, or in the case of Gaudiya Vishnu, the entire material universe is completely resting upon them. So this is the difficulty that people have to understand the Supreme Lord. Actually, it's not possible to, you know, materially understand this, because it's a contradiction. Apparently it's a contradiction that something is completely spiritual and the material things are coming from that spiritual thing. From a logical point of view, that doesn't make sense. Something is completely pure, has no material qualities, no material ingredients, no material consciousness, completely spiritually pure, and yet all the material things are coming from that spiritual thing. So logically, this is impossible to understand. This universal form, because the people cannot understand this, they actually therefore think that there is no spiritual form of the Supreme Lord. Because ultimately, if the original cause has produced this, you know, material energy, then either the original cause of everything cannot be spiritual. Our scientists believe that the original cause of everything must be material. So that's like the materialistic Sankhya philosophers. Or we have the nihilists, such as the Buddhists, and they believe, well then, it must be a void. But again, it can't be something spiritual. Or if they somehow or another conceive that the original cause of everything must be spiritual, because the Vedas state that it is spiritual, then it must be the opposite of material that it has no form, no variety, like this, no individuality. There's a very famous book by Paramahamsa Yogananda. It's because it's, you know, decades old, but still, you know, read by thousands of people, millions of people all over the world. And of course, in that book, he practices Kriya Yoga and meditates upon the universal form of the Lord. And he does mention in there that this process of Kriya Yoga is mentioned and sort of confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's almost as if the Bhagavad Gita that what he is teaching, that meditation upon the universal form, is the same thing that the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. So if you read that book, which most people did, which I did when I was younger, then, you know, as well as being an impersonalist, I also, you know, gradually thought that the universal form, was God. So all these pitfalls on the path of understanding. So, you know, for such persons, they believe that by meditation upon the universal form of the Lord, which is in essence, you know, non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the sense that that material universal form is God, that God doesn't have a separate form, spiritual form. All the forms that exist within, that we see in the universe, when Krishna comes, he's part of that material universal form. When the incarnations come, they're part of that universal form. Some of them actually believe that, you know, whereas we understand that Krishna, from his original form of Krishna, he manifested the universal form. They believe that the universe, that Krishna comes from the universal form. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, they believe the opposite way. So, it's very, very difficult for them to understand that there is actually a, all the different forms of the Lord that appear within the universe are completely aloof from the material element. They feel that they're all just a manifestation of the universal form, not some spiritual form that exists prior to them. So here, before we hear about the different incarnations of the Lord, the point is being made that the Lord is completely, you know, Vasudha-sattva, he is completely spiritual by nature. He is completely aloof from the material manifestation. Of course, if someone cannot understand this point, there is no possibility that they will ever understand the pastimes of Krishna. In fact, you know, if they can't understand this point, how the Lord remains aloof from the material world, and yet the whole material world is resting upon him, then when they read the pastimes of Krishna, they will definitely, without doubt, assume that his activities are material activities. They will not see them as the activities of the Supreme Personality of God. And that's the way that most people see the activities of Krishna. As, you know, someone very powerful, prince or kshatriya or, you know, personality, very famous person. Some people believe he didn't exist. Some people believe that if he did exist, that he was very, very powerful manifestation, you know, appearing within the universal form of the Lord, like that. So actually, the understanding of Krishna is proportionate to one's bhakti. That is, so therefore, you know, you have the Karma Yogis, the Jnana Yogis, and the Astanga Yogis. Gradually, as they become more and more purified through bhakti, they will understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Krishna actually sent a message to the gopis through Uddhava, the message that Uddhava read out to the gopis was that Krishna explained that ultimately all knowledge heads toward an understanding of Krishna. All Vedic knowledge, just like rivers, they flow into the ocean. They all head in that direction. So as the as people meditate upon the universal form, they're just seeing that everything is material. But by meditating upon the universal form, they get a sense that even if they have a material understanding of God, at least it gives them a conception of God. That, if we understand, just like, for instance, our legs, we move about. I always think of this because it describes in the universal form that when the Lord manifested legs, it allowed people to go about their business, and people perform all sorts of yajnas and sacrifices because Lord Vishnu manifested legs. I think about that because I know to perform yajnas I have to, you know, collect wood and, you know, collect this and collect that and, you know, get this paraphernalia and I run around, and I think, gee, if I couldn't walk, you know, it's a service that I couldn't do, which for myself is always in the back of my mind, because several stages in the course of my life I've actually lost the use of my legs completely because the bone in the knee sort of disintegrates, and every 10 years or so they operate on the knee and they clean it up, and then I can, so I get to the point where I just can't walk at all, can't even take one step, and then I have an operation and then I can walk. Sometimes after that operation it's really good, and sometimes I still struggle until the next operation, but it'll get to the point one day where I just, you know, won't be able to walk very much. And so I understand that, you know, that power of walking, one day it can be there and the next day it can be gone. Because, you know, the power of walking that everyone has is, you know, the facility which is given by the universe, and it can be withdrawn by the universe. But gradually, as people meditate upon the universal form, they understand that whatever they're able to do, they're doing not independently, but because it's totally something awarded to them by the universe. You know, the universe allows a manifestation of some senses and potency of senses, and when the universe withdraws that, disintegrates that ability, there's, you know, there's nothing one can do. So by meditating upon the universe, universal form, people understand that you know, one, everything is connected to everything is one. So that's one of the qualities of God, Eka, that everything, you know, everything is not different from God. So even though they're meditating upon the universal form, they still get that understanding, you know, that everything is non-different from God. They can only understand the material energy, but at least they understand the same principle. Everything is non-different from God. We understand that the Lord has a spiritual energy as well, and we understand that that spiritual energy is also non-different from God. But they at least understand that everything within the material world, that is non-different from God, and that God, whether it be the universe or form or whatever, is fully controlling everything that we do. So this is another very important understanding, that we're not independently acting. Also, you know, as they meditate upon the universal form, they begin to appreciate some of the qualities of the Supreme Person. Even if they think those qualities are material, they still begin to understand there are qualities of intelligence, because we see that the universe is supplying intelligence, which is particularly manifested within the brahmanas and the devotees. The universe is manifesting, and then if we look at the way the universe is providing and maintaining, every living entity. So we get to, you know, see the qualities that God is the maintainer of all living entities. So even though one is looking at the universe, they're still seeing the qualities of the Supreme Lord, but just attributing them to a material God, in one sense. But the understanding of the Supreme Lord, those same features are maintained as they go along progressively according to their level of bhakti, but gradually they understand that those qualities that they're appreciating within the Supreme Lord are in fact spiritual qualities. What they're attributing to material qualities are in fact the Lord's spiritual qualities, which they're just perceiving through the material energy. But according to their a person's level of bhakti, so whether people are meditating upon the universal form of the Lord, whether they are performing karma yoga, trying to be pious again, the karma yogis, they at least follow the authority of the Vedas, and in this way they're indirectly learning the propensity to follow the authority of God. Although that they may just want material benefit, but the ultimate gain they get is that they want a material benefit, but because they follow the Vedas, they develop a sense that they're following God, even though their understanding of God is not very developed. And then gradually, if there's an element of bhakti within that karma yoga, then they gradually understand that the material benefits that they're asking for are not very intelligent, and ultimately cause them a lot of suffering, so they're better off to avoid asking for material benefit. They become somewhat jnanis and try to detach themselves from the material world and attain liberation. But even in those activities of jnana or astanga yoga, where one directly tries to realize the super soul within the heart, in all of these different processes, Krishna is very tricky, because whether you're a karma yogi, a jnana yogi, or an astanga yogi, you depend upon saints and sadhus in order to follow that process. So even if you're a karmi, so for instance, sometimes people, they come to the temple and they want to do a hair cutting ceremony for their child. So in many cases, it's just a karma kanda activity for them. Now, the Vedic system is set up that because the devotees are always, you know, looking for the opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness, when those karmis, jnanis, or yogis who are dependent upon sadhus in order to do any of those processes, if they come across the devotees, the devotees have been given the intelligence by Krishna to divert their minds away from the karma and the jnana and the astanga, and just a little bit more towards the bhakti side. So the whole Vedic process is made so that they must associate with brahmanas and sadhus like this. But amongst those ordinary brahmanas and sadhus, of course, the devotees of the Lord, and if they as they're performing their activities, what happens is that they accumulate agyata sakriti. Agyata sakriti means that, for instance, in order to, that someone's birthday, they just want to give the daughter or the son the blessings. So they come to the temple, they give some of the brahmanas some, rice and some lakshmi to the deities. they may have a completely material understanding, but because they've actually performed some unknowing or even unwilling devotional service, it accumulates as a jhana sukriti. All of those different karmis, jnanis, yogis, as the unknown accumulation of piety accumulates, when it is sufficient in one lifetime, they gain the opportunity to associate with devotee, and as a result of the accumulation of piety within their heart, the first rays of faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, that he is actually the Supreme Transcendental Lord beyond the material world, and if one surrenders unto him in Krishna consciousness, one will attain everything, you know, materially, spiritually. That dawning of faith, the Shraddha, appears as a result of that Agyata Sukriti. So these karmis, jnanis, yogis, or even complete materialists, by this Agyata Sukriti, gradually they, and associating with devotees and going to the various temples and what have you, they gradually accumulate the opportunity to take to bhakti proper, purely, Suda Bhakti. That is the accumulated result. It is by that bhakti that they gradually increase in their understanding of the nature of the Supreme Lord. They have an understanding, as we said, they're gaining realizations about the nature of the Lord, whether they're meditating upon the universal form, whether they're karma yogis, jnana yogis, or they're getting some realization, you know, association, relationship with the Supreme Lord. It's increasing, increasing, increasing. So Krishna told the gopis that all that knowledge ultimately leads to Krishna. But he said, but you gopis, you've been in love with me from the very start. Therefore, you have full realization of me from the very beginning. So he was, you know, it's an instruction for all of us that one who loves Krishna from the very beginning, all the realization that has taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of births through the processes of karma, jnana, stanga, like this, a devotee just tries to chant Hare Krishna, to, you know, serve Krishna with love. They try to do their services, and all the realization that they accumulate over hundreds and hundreds of years, a devotee gets immediately, very, very quickly, just by loving Krishna. So we see that the gopis, they never took up karma yoga, they never took up jnana yoga, they never took up astanga yoga, they never did any of these things. All they did from the very beginning was just try to love Krishna. And their understanding of Krishna is so wonderful. You know, when you read in their conversations with Krishna, you know, they'll tell you all about Narayan and the Vishnus and, you know, the Mahatattva. You know, they throw these things into their conversations with Krishna accordingly. They have full understanding of all the various incarnations of the Lord. And they'll just pick and choose certain qualities that, you know, are suitable. So when Krishna separated from the gopis, you know, they were saying, oh, you were just like Ram. You know, Radharani was saying to the bumblebee, you were just like Ram. You know, you're cruel. You killed Vali, you know, in a cruel way. And what you did to Supanika, that was also very cruel, like this. And I'll say, but he was a Kshatriya. You expect cruelty from a Kshatriya, but even as Brahmana Dev, you also, he was a Brahmana, but still, showing that cruel nature you have. That he took away, Bali Maharaj surrendered everything. You still took everything away. And this. So, you know, they will describe, because actually Krishna's grandmother is Purnamasi. Purnamasi is the mother of Gargamuni. And Gargamuni is the Acharya who gave Krishna Brahman initiation after Krishna killed Kamsa. And Gargamuni taught Krishna and Balaram all the different Vedas and the Kshatriya skills, knowledge. His mother, Purnamasi, is... Was that Sandipani? Yeah, Sandipani. Sandipani. Yeah, that's right. Gargamuni did the name giving ceremony in the beginning. Yeah. Sandipani Muni, thank you. So, Purnamasi is actually an incarnation, or she's in fact Yogamaya, and she appears within Vrindavan. And so all the gopis, you know, they have these very intimate conversations with Purnamasi. And Purnamasi, who is the mother of Sandipani Muni, very, very knowledgeable in all the Vedas. And so, you know, their goal, of course, is they're talking to her because she helps to arrange Krishna's various pastimes in Vrindavan. But... you know, in those discussions, they also hear about Krishna and his various, you know, incarnations and, you know, how, like this. So they get all Vedic knowledge. You know, not that they're seeking Vedic knowledge, but they're seeking to understand the qualities of Krishna. And sometimes to understand the qualities of Krishna, you know, different aspects are explained to the gopis and to the residents of Vrindavan. So just because they love Krishna, Krishna arranges that they have so much understanding, you know, beyond even all the Vedic scholars. You know, their understanding is so complete. But beyond what the Vedic scholars cannot understand, of course, the gopis of Vrindavan understand Krishna's qualities and, you know, the nature of his most confidential, intimate pastimes. These things which are not understood by ordinary without a very, very high level of bhakti, prema bhakti, these things, of course, are not understood. So their knowledge goes way, way, way beyond. You know, they understand this creation and the incarnations and, you know, how the Supreme Lord is aloof and so many different things. Everything is there. but beyond that, they also understand this very confidential, intimate understanding of Krishna's qualities and how to reciprocate with him in confidential love. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada would say to us that in his lectures and in his books, that you know, as devotees, you know, we try to understand Krishna not for the sake of understanding him, because you cannot understand Krishna fully. Even Krishna is so unlimited that he, you know, cannot understand his own unlimited, you know, qualities of nature. The understanding is there, and then Krishna is understanding, and then his own qualities and nature is expanding unlimitedly. And then, you know, so even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he appeared, there's Krishna appearing as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand the, you know, special position of himself. This. So it's not possible to understand Krishna fully. You can read about Krishna for thousands, you know, millions of lifetimes. Ananta Sesha has been glorifying Krishna unlimitedly. He has thousands and thousands of head. He just continually glorifies speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam. He has not come to an end of Krishna's glories. So Srila Prabhupada would say, if you can understand enough to love Krishna, then your life is perfect. And if you love Krishna, Krishna will reveal to you every single thing that you need to know about him in this lifetime. And whatever Krishna doesn't reveal, you don't need to know. We just need to know enough to love Krishna. And that is the goal of knowledge. And one who, you know, develops that bhakti to that point, actually they know everything about Krishna. By Krishna's grace, Krishna, you know, reveals to them. And therefore you see, you know, with Srila Prabhupada that you know, you can ask him unlimited questions, millions and millions of questions, and he would just you know, answer them unlimitedly like that, perfectly, you know, by the grace of Krishna. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yep, I saw it.
So when does
yeah, that the question is, what is the sign that a devotee has, you know, sufficient knowledge of Krishna, or you know, like that? It's not so much a question of sufficiency as, you know, one takes according to one's satisfaction, you know. You know, just like when you're eating a meal, you know, when you're fully satisfied, then you consider, well, you know, that's, you know, you know, they say what you leave half the stomach empty, isn't it? Quarter? Was it? A third. Third empty, one third, fill it up, or two thirds fill it up. What is it? What's it? When you two thirds fill it up. Yeah, so leave one third empty. So, that, you know, there's a bit of a formula there, but generally, you know, most people eat around that sort of level, but to the, you know, when they feel satisfied. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the devotees, it describes in the ninth chapter, that the devotees are always absorbed in transcendental bliss. They're always constantly hearing and chanting about Krishna. So, in essence, a devotee doesn't come to a point where they think, okay, I've come to sufficient knowledge, I'll stop learning about Krishna. In that sense, because the devotee, because they come to a point of loving Krishna and attached to Krishna, that is their source of happiness. That is their only source of happiness, is just always being, you know, absorbed in hearing and chanting. But in that sense, they're not absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna simply for the sake of gaining knowledge about Krishna. It's because they love Krishna so much that they just can't stop. You know, therefore, we see that, you know, Srimati Radharani, again, you know, she was somewhat angry at both Krishna and his messenger, who she thought was a bumblebee, and she tried to send the messenger away, and she tried to rebuke Krishna, and you know, wanted to say, you know, that we really don't want anything more to do with that blackish boy. He's caused us so much trouble here in Vrindavan. But at the same time, she understood that then in the very next moment that, you know, despite the extreme feelings of separation, where they're just crying, and feeling such difficulty, that burning with separation that Krishna is gone, she said that, you know, actually we can't give up, you know, hearing and talking about him. We want to, because we feel that he's such a rascal, but we can't, because it is so sweet. So you know, Srila Prabhupada mentions in that part of the Srimad Bhagavatam that, you know, hearing and chanting about Krishna is non-different from Krishna, and all the different emotions, transcendental emotions that one feels by always thinking of Krishna, they're also non-different from Krishna. And because they're non-different from Krishna, who is in fact the reservoir of transcendental bliss, the very form, the personification of transcendental bliss, any connection with Krishna actually produces unlimited ecstasy. So the gopis were always in ecstasy, whether they were trying to not talk about Krishna, but always thinking about him and talking about him anyway, or whether they were talking about him. So, you know, a devotee's hearing and chanting, as we said, a good sufficiency of knowledge is when you come to love Krishna. Then you can say, yes, now I have sufficient knowledge. But if you come to love Krishna, you cannot stop hearing and chanting about Krishna. And so, you know, that transcendental knowledge will increase anyway. But you know, there is a difference. Sometimes in the beginning, devotees, you know, are trying to more come to a point of, sometimes devotees may want to come to a point of having vast knowledge about Krishna. There can be, you know, one can gain a lot of respect as a devotee. One can be seen as a big devotee, or, you know, a knowledgeable devotee, you know, a great pundit. Sometimes devotees actually want to, you know, gain that sort of reputation as a devotee by having huge, you know, vast quantities of knowledge about Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada's point is that it's better to try and understand Krishna to come to the point of love, because by just developing knowledge about Krishna for the sake of understanding him without trying to come to the point of love does not make one very, you know, as safe or as fixed up in devotional service. You know, one can be a great scholar on Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, not necessarily having developed their love, and their situation as a devotee, you know, may not be as strong, as stable, as you know, fixed up. But a devotee who actually develops their love and attachment to Krishna sincerely, you know, even their knowledge may appear not so technical or not so vast, but their position in devotional service is very safe, very stable, because they're very attached to Krishna. They can't leave Krishna for a second. They love Krishna, you know. It's like You can do anything to that devotee. They're so attached, you know. Whereas sometimes one who may be a scholar but not necessarily attached, if there's some difficulty, or sometimes just Maya becomes very attractive, and they may be still more attached to Maya.
Mission of Venerable Engagement of Prabhupada, I was thinking of Srila Prabhupada in Rath Yatra in Marvel Arch in London, you know, near the Marvel Arch, when they were Jagannath Rath Yatra. He was so absorbed in chanting and dancing, even British people, you know, from the British, so many people were there, they couldn't stop. And they asked the devotee, please stop this movement. How can we stop? This is called love and devotion.
That's right, yes. That's
so engrossed in Krishna, lotus feet. And Hanuman was saying the other day, three things are very important to me. Jivara, Namruchi, and Vaishnava Seva. So the more we do these three things, then only we can think that we are very close to becoming devotees. We are not devotees actually. We are real rascals.
That's
but we are trying to be. To serve Krishna in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. That should be your aim. And try to preach that pleases the Mahaprabhu the most. And this is called, especially Melbourne people, is very good because they are trying to do their best in preach.
That's right, Yes, that's.
And prasadam distribution of peace.
That was Prabhupada's mood that, you know. He was quite happy that his devotees were regularly studying, but that they were always actively engaged, because he understood that, you know, by serving Krishna, you know, manifesting your service, you know, that's love, you're serving. He understood that the devotees will know everything, you know, and you see that. You know, some of the leading devotees in the movement who, you know, for the majority of their devotional service have just performed massive amounts of service. And they haven't necessarily, you know, been, you know, 90% engaged in study, 90% just actively serving. Still, their realizations of Krishna, you know, are unsurpassed, because Krishna has given them, you know, that understanding, that realization. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, the same. We see that Srila Prabhupada's activities, he didn't just sit in his room studying all day. He got up in the early hours of the day. He studied something every day, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Acharyas. All day he was preaching. All day he was preaching. And his preaching, you know, was on this practical level, little understanding of Krishna, enough to serve. That's Prabhupada was given, you know, I'll give you enough understanding that you'll want to serve him, and if you serve him, everything else will be there. I can't, you know, Prabhupada didn't try to teach everyone, oh, I'll tell you all about Krishna. He tried to, I'll give you enough knowledge about Krishna that you want to serve him, and then you're okay. That's it. And then you one day you'll become it. You keep serving, little study every day, you'll become guru one day. That's it.
And also, the whole night he was translating Bhagavatam.
Yes, that's right. And Krishna gave him the understanding how to do that by his service, you know, his great service attitude throughout the whole course of his life. So devotees hear and chant enough to understand how to serve Krishna with love, and then by serving Krishna with love while hearing and chanting, they get full realization. Any other questions or comments? Jai Bhagavan Srila Prabhupada.